Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, kind enough to fill in for us today. For Janae Agumake, who is out fulfilling her responsibilities for the LA Sparks and the WNBA. You can catch Trevor as a part of Sports Nation on ESPN Plus, on SportsCenter, on Snapchat, covering college football for us here on ESPN. Always a pleasure to have Trev in the building. And boy, oh boy, it is especially special on today as Trevor, a fan of all things Atlanta, is helping us spread some of this Hawks propaganda. And a reminder, the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals are on ESPN Radio. Tune in Friday for Game 2 as Chris Middleton and the Bucks host John Collins and the Hawks, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. And we had Hal Duncan on before, who's been cutting wrestling promos for the Hawks all through this postseason. Trev's been spreading the good word here, and so it feels only right that we get to talk to someone in that Hawks locker room right now. You may have seen this man putting someone on a poster on one of your TV screens at some point in time here recently. Hawks forward John Collins, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline right now. John, how you doing, man? We appreciate your time.
No, I'm doing good. I appreciate the intro. Hope y'all doing well.
We're doing very well, John, and we want to get into a lot of stuff in this series with you. Game one, you guys take on the road in Milwaukee last night, but we've been sitting around here talking about it all day. Everyone saw the shirt that you wore after the win in the series against the 76ers. So walk us through the process for that. Like, was that the only shirt that you brought to the arena that night? Was it that level of confidence heading into that game seven against the Sixers?
Well, you know, no, if I'm just being honest, I actually got the shirt post-game. I didn't even make the shirt. I actually got it from a friend. And, you know, he texted me a little too late. He wanted me to wear it. He wanted me to wear it into the arena. I feel like it actually kind of happened, worked out perfectly to where we won after the game. And I got to wear the shirt for media. And, you know, it was I feel like it hit how it was supposed to.
Oh, yeah, it definitely hit a little harder when you get to wear that post-game, without question. There ain't no question about that. Now, John, the lob that went down in-game, right, I was mystified at the idea that in the middle of your first Eastern Conference Finals game, you and Trae Young would have the unmitigated gall to go off the backboard in the middle of, like, a screen-roll attack in the middle of a game and put down an alley-oop that was seen around the world, essentially. Now, it seemed very casual for the two of you. How does it seem that casual in the middle of a game with those sorts of stakes on the line?
You know, I don't ever know if I could say it's casual myself, man. That was just a big time play on both of our ends. But I'd be, you know, remiss to say that we didn't work on that. We haven't, you know, done that a million times in practice and in games. We have a couple game rips. You know, doing that, you know, throwing it off the glass. We did it in the preseason game, in our very first, you know, official NBA sanctioned game. And then we did it in Brooklyn earlier this year. So, hey, man, stuff like that can happen, especially, you know, when Trey's feeling like how he was feeling the other day. You know, I just got to be ready.
That's incredible. We're talking to Hawks forward John Collins, who, again, wore the shirt with his dunk over 76ers center Joel Embiid and talked about that last night. Kent Bazemore tweeted out, you guys do practice that, so it's incredible to hear. When is the first time you guys float that out there? Like, does it happen naturally and then you just decide we're going to drill it from here on out here? Because that's an incredible thing to actually rep during practice time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trey, I feel like Trey's a very bold player in his own right. And when I say that, you know, I feel like Trey practices the bold stuff he does in games as well as practice. So for us, it's just having an understanding of him knowing and, you know, understanding when I like to jump and where I, you know, where I'm, you know, strongest jumping at, and as well as understanding when he, you know, he's feeling in that rhythm to throw it. And I feel like that's just something we've developed, you know, through, you know, we developed our chemistry over, you know, throughout the year of us just being together. And I feel like it's only going to get stronger, but as I said, just a very, very bold play on both our parts, but we, you know, we finished the job.
The boldness is so very much appreciated as a lifelong Atlanta fan. I'm not going to lie to you. Now, when it comes to deciphering whether or not Trey's going up for a floater versus a lob, I imagine it puts the defense in quite the bind as far as which one to decide. Is that something that you've identified now to where it's easy, is all outdoors for you to know whether or not this is a pass going up or it's one of his trademark floaters?
You know, I definitely have a very good sense, I feel like, of when he's going to you know, float his shot or when he is going to throw a lob. But I feel like the thing that, you know, just helps us out both, you know, is my explosiveness and how quick I am off the floor. You know, a lot of the times Trey throws, you know, may throw a late pass, and just my ability to get off the ground quickly and go get it sort of just gives us an extra dynamic to where, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a perfectly timed lob. But we can still get the job done.
Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, talking to John Collins, Hawks forward here with us. Team has a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals over Milwaukee right now. And you've said a couple of times that Trey makes bold plays in here. When did you know that he was a different kind of player? Because we've seen the effect that he's had in this locker room, on the city, on the league as a whole. So when did you, in that locker room behind the scenes, know that you guys had someone different on that level in Trey Young?
I'll just say, you know, watching him his first year in the league and watching how much he wanted to improve, how comfortable he was with the game of basketball already. You know, there's certain things that the guys do with a certain talent level that you can just pick up on. I feel like, especially me being in the league as long as I am, I have a great nose for basketball talent. And I feel like I've always, you know, thought that Trey was, you know, at an elite level basketball-wise. And, you know, he's been able to prove that now as we're on the biggest stage.
John, when it comes to just the feel around not only your locker room, but really the city of Atlanta, one thing I picked up on, there was a game in which you had done the post-game interview. And immediately after, you were at home at State Farm Arena, and you dapped up everybody at the scores table before you took off. And it felt as though not only there was a joy that was experienced by everybody on that scorer's table, but also within the locker room, but just an understanding that there's a loose nature with which y'all play. What is that like to experience as you move on throughout the postseason?
It's really nice, man, because as we know, playoff basketball is, you know, the toughest basketball that we can really find around the world. And it's always great that we know we have a great system, a great group of people, not only on our team, but just within the organization, within the arena, as you're saying, that support us, have our back 100%. It just makes us going out on the court and competing, you know, that much harder. It gives us something to work for. It gives us, you know, people to play for, as well as the city of Atlanta. Those personal relationships and people that you bond with always give you different perspectives on, you know, what it means to be a pro.
John, you mentioned you've been around playing basketball for a long time. You've been around this league for a while now. And I tweeted last night, you're the guy who can fill in all the cracks. Like, if you need something done out in the court, yeah, it seems like you're willing to go in there and do it. So what's the mentality for you going to work, going in each and every night out here that allows you to do that?
Man, you know, sometimes I question it myself. You know, I wonder, you know, what is in me that continues to wake up every morning and go out there and play like a madman. I still question it myself, to be honest with you. But, you know, I feel like it's, you know, got something to do with my upbringing, the coaches that I previously had, you know, my dedication. And I feel like just my tenure with this team, you know, I have something to play for. I feel like, you know, I was really at the beginning stages of the process of our rebuilding. And I take every single moment of this, you know, personally, because I feel like, you know, I put my heart and soul into, you know, trying to get to a position like this. So it's all in the cards for me to just go out there and lay it on the line. I mean, at what better time can I do it than now?
No better time than here and now, certainly. John, we appreciate your time. Before we let you go, you mentioned your coaches. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. What's happened with this team since Nate McMillan took over and the midway point of the season has been sensational. What's he been like behind the scenes for you guys? What's he meant to this team?
You know, I continue to mention it. You know, Coach Nate's big on his three C's: calm, cool, and connected. And that's something that he, as I said, he's preached to us throughout the entire year, and that's sort of his coaching style, is to always have a plan for us to be connected and to be, you know, another term he likes to use is fist, right? To have a tight fist mentality, and for us not to sort of have a palm out, right? Because that means we're not together. And that's sort of his mentality with everything, and in the sense that we need to be together and be connected and to be calm and understand, you know, situations and how to handle them. And, you know, coaches, you know, very old school, and I feel like his impact is definitely rubbing off on us a lot this year.
It shows, and the impact of this entire team on the NBA postseason has been incredible to watch. John, we appreciate the time today, man. Best of luck on Friday in Game 2. We're looking forward to more T-shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you for having me on. Hopefully, I'm back on soon.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Like I say, John Collins, official friend of the program, in addition to being Hawks forward and a guy putting someone on a poster near you. So it's been incredible to watch that postseason run. But coming up next, the Phoenix Suns would also like a word and the impact that they have had on this postseason right now. How optimistic should the Clippers be, though, heading back into Game 3 back in their home arena in Los Angeles? We'll get to that next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales. This look ahead to the weekend is brought to you by the Bank of America Customized Cash Rewards Credit Card. Earn 3% cash back on online shopping. Copyright 2021 Bank of America Corporation. And we head to the Goodyear Hotline now as we just talked to John Collins, forward for the Hawks. On what's going on in the Eastern Conference Finals, we can check in with our friend, our colleague, and the great Doris Burke, ESPN NBA analyst on the Goodyear Hotline, as she is on call on ESPN Radio for Clippers and Suns. Coverage starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. Doris, thank you so much. We appreciate the time today. How you doing?
Good to be with you guys, Mike. Very good. I'm superb. Getting ready for Game 3, a must-win for the Clippers.
And Doris, games 1 and 2 have been really closely contested, though, for this Clippers squad who finds themselves down 0-2 right now. What reason do you think they have to be optimistic heading back to Los Angeles for this Game 3?
Well, you make an excellent point, right? They've been in the game until late. I think obviously one positive they can take is the switch in the starting lineup did help them, in particular Patrick Beverley, made life a little bit more difficult for Devin Booker. One of the things Ty Lue just spoke to us about just literally moments ago is the fact that Patrick Beverley is one of those great rear view defenders. And by that he meant, you know, basically even if Devin gets his shoulders by, Patrick doesn't give up on the play. And so he'll come from behind, make at least Devin Booker feel like I'm in your space. I'm here. I could block your shot. Just make him as uncomfortable as possible. I thought they did a better job team defense wise. I think the key is they've got to find an answer for DeAndre Ayton. I mean, the guy has been more mature than I expected him to be between the lines, outside the lines. His focus has been outstanding. And he's a completely different animal than they faced in Rudy Gobert last game. And so they'll start big again is my expectation with Zubats. And I'll say this to you. Marcus Morris has got to play better. You know, he is really bothered by a knee. I think it's his right knee that is experiencing tremendous soreness, and that's having an impact on their small lineups defensively.
When it comes to the Clippers from a macro perspective, though, this ain't nothing new for this postseason in particular. Third straight right. series, they've gone down 0-2. So what's been the key to them bouncing back in these series, Doris?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think by nature, Ty Lue is sort of his meter doesn't go too high or too low. So he's never overreacting to the situation. And I think certainly his players feel that. And I believe they're confident in the adjustments he made. One of the things they're talking about tonight is doing a better job moving the basketball. And you know, Paul George is clearly carrying a heavy burden offensively. And before the missed free throws, which is the only thing people are talking about. He was brilliant in the fourth quarter, you know, bucket after bucket. But he's got to have some help. And one of the things that I think they're talking about is player movement and ball movement. And you know this. When you start to go down in a game, everybody starts to press individually. When the best case scenario is stick with what you do, keep moving the ball and keep moving the bodies. You are without Kawhi, who is the one player who excels from the elbow and down and can make tough two after tough two at this time of year. You don't have that. So in addition to Paul George, you've got to get other guys involved, and I'm curious to see what the others do tonight.
Chinay and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to the great Doris Burke, our ESPN NBA analyst, who's going to be on the call for Game 3 on ESPN Radio coming up tonight. And Doris, we've talked so much about what the Clippers need to do to get back into this, but we also have the news today that Chris Paul is officially available for the Phoenix Suns tonight on the other side. Have you gotten an indication of what we can expect to see, how much of Chris Paul we can expect to see tonight?
Boy, you know, we were just discussing this because we just got off the phone with Ty Lue and we don't have Monty for another hour or so. But the wording of it is interesting. It says he's available. So until we talk to Monty, it would be purely guesswork. But listen, I think if he's 10 days out as of yesterday, I believe, from his initial diagnosis. As you know, you have to have two negative tests and you have to pass the cardiac screening. And he clearly has done that if he's available to play. And so my expectation is if he's available to play, you would think he would start. And you're talking about a guy who was absolutely magnificent in the last round against Denver. He's shooting 50-40-90 for the playoffs. He is the point god in terms of decision-making, assist-to-turnover ratio, controlling the tempo. And here's what's fascinating to me about the Phoenix Suns. In this era of the three-point revolution, they do make timely threes, Mike, but they are mid-range assassins with both Devin Booker and Chris Paul. And so often in the postseason, it's the tough twos. Can you make tough twos? They have two guys who are elite at it.
What, then, is the ceiling that you see for the Phoenix Suns, particularly rounding into Game 3 with the reavailability of Chris Paul, but like just beyond that, what you've seen from DeAndre Ayton, what you've seen from Booker?
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. And they are a sustainable basketball team, even when Chris Paul isn't there, right? You have elite backcourt play. Cam Payne, his performance in the first two games, filling just gigantic shoes, not only, you know, taking excellent care of the basketball, getting them into their tempo game, but there's a couple of guys that aren't being focused on, right? We've talked a lot about Ayton because he's been brilliant, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, et cetera, et cetera. So Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder are the kinds of things that are required in today's NBA. Long, athletic, switchable, lockdown defenders on the perimeter. Now, listen, guys are going to score, but the fact of the matter is you need guys who are willing to compete for 48 minutes, make it very difficult on the best offensive players in the world. Like, neither guy needs a play called for them. Neither guy expects a play called for them. They fit in around what the other guys do. They're ready on they're shot ready on the catch in the corners. Just absolutely critical. I mean, they're a complete basketball team, and what they did getting the two wins without Chris Paul, just incredible stuff. I think their ceiling is very capable of winning a championship. They're going to sustain this level of play.
It's been incredible to watch so far, and again, the Suns will take that 2-0 series lead to Los Angeles for Game 3 tonight. Coverage is going to begin at 8:30 p.m. Eastern here on ESPN Radio, and you will hear Doris Burke and the crew on the call for that game tonight. Doris, have a fantastic call. Looking forward to Game 3.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Be well.
The great Doris Burke, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on the Goodyear Hotline. And let's stick with it. Coming up next, Trevor mentioned it. This is not by any means uncharted territory for this Los Angeles Clippers team. What should give them the most confidence heading into Game 3 tonight? Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The NBA Western Conference Finals are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight. Game 3 is Terrence Mann and the Clippers host DeAndre Ayton and the Suns, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. It is Chinay and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Our thanks to John Collins from the Hawks, Doris Burke, who's going to be on the call for ESPN Radio, for both joining us on the Goodyear Hotline on the show. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales sitting in for Chinay Agumake. And Trev, how are we feeling? Game 3 tonight, 9 o'clock Eastern. Coverage is going to start at 8:30 Eastern here on ESPN Radio. The Suns go back home, and we have this other dynamic at play that we didn't really have time to get into with Doris, but Chris Paul available for Game 3 tonight. He has officially cleared the COVID-19 protocol he's been in for the last 10 days. We haven't heard about his status yet, what we can expect in this game, but he is going back in a Western Conference Finals that he was never able to make with the Clippers in Los Angeles to the team that he spent so much time with in the Lob City days there, potentially where he can get a start in this game. That's got to be a very interesting feeling for Chris Paul in this particular setting all coming together at once.
That's exactly right. Like, I find it fascinating from that standpoint, and seeing as how he's had one of the best postseason runs that we've seen from him. It's like he's born anew. Granted, he's alongside a lot of people that can make just about anybody look youthful in their skill sets. But Chris Paul, as Doris touched on, absolutely killing the mid-range game. Like, this dude is out here old man gaming, showing people that middies are still free if you want to come and get them. And it's special to see. And so knowing that he's got a little bit of something else behind wanting to get back into this series specifically should pan out well for at least the viewer at the very least.
Yeah, I can say I think it makes it very interesting for everyone from our standpoint. But you're right, from the game standpoint, like, there's been a lot of conversation. You mentioned the fountain of youth in Phoenix might be having an effect on Chris Paul, but he's also undeniably had an effect in the maturity on this team. And I think you saw that. Like, for all the great in Devin Booker, we've talked so much about Chris Paul's effect on this team this entire season and postseason, and then we lift the lid on that and find out, oh yeah, Devin Booker can do bad all by himself too, but the waning moments of game two, you saw some of the carelessness with the ball, spots where having the adult on the floor, so to speak, and Chris Paul can certainly help. So all that being said, Trev, who you like tonight in game three? Because we know the Clippers aren't any stranger to this. They've come back down from 0-2 twice in this postseason. They're the only team in NBA history to do that twice in one postseason here. So what do you think tonight, winners and losers for game two, or game three, excuse me?
I ain't gonna lie to you, dog. Like, I was set on the idea of the Suns going, doing this Suns in four deal. Once again, like, I was convinced until you brought that up, because as Doris touched on, as you have touched on, just the historical nature of them coming back from down 0-2 in series is something to behold. Now, I'm not saying they're going to run away and win this series now by any stretch of the imagination, but a Game 3 win does feel as realistic as possible. Now, pre-show, we were talking, and I thought the idea of Paul George and giving as much as he has to this point, averaging 30 a game at this point, and has only improved as the playoffs have gone on from a scoring standpoint, I think, again, I tried to call it last time I was on this show and saying that the weight of the world would fall on his shoulders and he would crumble. He hasn't done so yet, and so I will give him his credit. I will give him his apology in my form and say that, no, he's going to continue this streak of playoff P that we've grown to appreciate to in large part, and he will sort of will this team in a way that bounces back once again from down 0-2.
Yeah, I agree, Trev. I think games one and two have been so close. Like, we saw what it took to beat them in game two of this series. And I know we keep hearing about Kawhi Leonard's status in this series. He's still out for tonight's game, and they're treating it like something that might end in him coming back. Like, I don't think we're going to see Kawhi Leonard again this postseason. And I don't say that with a place of any information, but when we talk about the injury that we have been with Kawhi Leonard, you hear things about ACL on a guy who's already had to miss so much time. Like, I'm not counting on him to come back, and I'd have a feeling that the Clippers have to treat it like he's not going to come back, which does something, I think, to settle it, at least where it's, all right, we got to go with the guys that we've got out here. We've got to go out here with, you know, getting the best out of them. Doris Burke said was a great rear view defender, not going to give up on things. Marcus Morris has to be better. Like, all of these people, they know who they've got to count on now. There's no waiting for Superman to come bursting through on this thing. And I think that gives them a fair amount of security, because Paul George has been a walking 25-10 this postseason. And it feels strange, but I'm comfortable right now. And I've been as critical of Paul George as anyone, but you can count on him right now. The two missed free throws late were a bummer, and it certainly wasn't a good look relative to his past, but the rest of Paul George and what he's meant to this team is delivered, and so I'm comfortable counting on him in these situations and comfortable in those role players stepping up at home the way they tend to do in the postseason.
What do you do, though, Mike, with the idea of an exhaustion from an emotional standpoint where you did get right down to the edge, you had a ball break your way that frankly a lot of folks believe should not have broken your way, and you still come up short? You get what you get out of Paul George consistently again. You get what you get out of Reggie Jackson once again. And it just doesn't seem to be enough. So is there an emotional exhaustion that could carry over, even if you're headed back to the crib, that ends up leading to your detriment in your mind?
No, because I think we always talk about it being a make or miss league, and you know this. I mean, Harvard running back, former Notre Dame offensive lineman, like, you know things about the game flow here for the Clippers. And I remember so often, early when I got to Notre Dame, we were like a 6-5 team every year, and we'd get in close games, and things would start to go poorly for us in the fourth quarter. We lost to UConn on senior day, Syracuse on senior day, Tulsa at home. Like, bad losses you shouldn't have to have happen. And it got to a point where it felt like, here we go again every time. And the Clippers have had some of those breakthrough moments this postseason. Paul George has had them personally, where you stacked enough of, all right, we're never really out of it. We've been down 0-2 in these series before, and we found ways to play our game and get back out of this. And so, Trev, I feel like being able to defeat that boogeyman, so to speak, that specter of doubt that lives in an athlete until you see the ball go through the proverbial basket, has been something that's really going to help this team out.
I ain't going to lie. You taking out UConn, Syracuse, and Tulsa fan bases just, like, real quick right there was kind of funny. You just absolutely smoked them and saying that they were bad losses. I just had to bring that back up.
I mean, they would. Anyone from UConn, Syracuse, and Tulsa from the span of like 2008 to 2010, if you can convince me that you thought you were some great juggernaut football teams, I will wait at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter for those comments and replies. Listen, you got the wins. I felt terribly about them at the time. Our own fans were pelting us with snowballs during that Syracuse loss. Like, that was hell on earth. But don't act like you guys were rolling in here like we want Bama. Like, that wasn't real life. We don't have to act like it was.
That's remarkable. But to your point, to go back to get back on course or whatever have you, they have shaken a mental boogeyman in large part, and Paul George specifically has shaken a lot of that, and you know, it was a lot of fair criticism up until this point, but it is a beautiful thing to see him bounce back and really sort of come into his own and wear the weight of that franchise without Kawhi Leonard by his side as well as he has, because that's what it's going to take. It is looking at next man up and saying, hey, Terrence, man, we need something from you, and more often than not, he's come through in large part. So that balance, that understanding that Ty Lue, I assume, has instilled within that roster is paramount in order for them to advance and bounce back. This is Shanae Angola Jr. right here on ESPN Radio. Coming up next, we have Rihanna denied, potentially, into a Brooklyn bar. I don't know how you do that, especially when ASAP Rocky is right alongside her. This is Shanae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Shanae Angola Jr., the podcast.
Thanks to everybody who came through the show and helped out today here on Shanae Angola Jr., Mike Golic Jr., Trevor Scales, who was kind enough to hang out with us today, filling in for Shanae Agumake. You can catch him as a part of Sports Nation on ESPN Plus each and every day around here. We also talked to L. Duncan of the 6 o'clock Sports Center fame here to spread more Hawks propaganda. Adrian Wojnarowski, our ESPN NBA insider, came through. Marcus Spears, our NFL insider, as well as John Collins, Hawks forward, speaking of Hawks propaganda, the dunk t-shirt seen around the world. And of course, we finished things off getting you ready for Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals tonight with Doris Burke, our ESPN NBA analyst, who's going to be on the call. Coverage starting here, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio station. It's been a hell of a day. It's been a hell of a week around here. The NBA playoffs have us feeling some type of way. And so whether you're getting ready to enjoy a night out on Thursday night, whether you're like Kevin Durant getting ready to eviscerate an NBA legend on Twitter, whatever the energy you have, let's try and keep it right here and keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Shanae Angola Jr.
Boy, oh boy, we are sprinting to the finish line here. All right, Trev, keeping that same energy as the NFL's offseason continues to sprint along here. We got news today that the NFL has cleared and will allow throwback helmets starting in 2022. So, Trev, what are the top-tier helmets you're looking forward to seeing right now? Because I think there are some clear-cut winners.
Ooh, give me the old-school Houston Oilers. Give me old-school red primary base to the black Falcon onset on the Atlanta Falcons helmet. Those are probably my two that I'm most excited to see if they come to fruition.
Yeah, Trev, I'm looking at this right now, and I feel like there's a couple clear-cut above and beyond here. I like the Eagles' Kelly Green helmets coming back right there with the Kelly Green jerseys, the Bucks' creamsicle uniforms, and then really everybody else after that right now. That is it. it's just been a joy to see them all on the timeline today. Like, the old school Bronco logos, great. The Houston Oilers color scheme, undefeated and untied in the history of this entire NFL. But I think we're all happy to have them back here, maybe except for those Green Bay Packers ones.
Just absolutely heinous. But oh, also shout out Buffalo Bills red over red backdrop, blue Bills overlay.
That is true. I can say we have to pay respect to the jerseys that came before us. Keeping that same energy, though, here, this one is very close to home here. We saw a lot of announcements today for the U.S. Paralympic track and field teams going out here, and the jumpers are particularly near and dear to my heart, including Sam Grew, former for anyone that wasn't aware of this story, back in 2012, my last year at Notre Dame, Sam Grew was essentially an adopted member of our team. He was going through treatment for cancer at that time that left him with a prosthetic leg that did not stop his athletic pursuits here. And all Sam has done in the meantime is go and be a part of the U.S. Olympic Paralympic track and field team as a jumper in the past, a gold medalist there, just graduated from Notre Dame, is heading to Michigan Med School here, and now we'll head to Tokyo with this group here. So congratulations to Sam, the rest of the team here. I just continue to be in awe. As he tweeted, hey, University of Michigan Med School, I may have to miss a couple of days of class.
Man, whatever you need to do to go handle your biz over in Tokyo, bro, like, that is just a phenomenal set of accomplishments, right? Like, not only the athletic prowess to get to the top of that entire sport, but also, hey, by the way, we go knock out a little med school on the back end. Like, it's tremendous.
Pretty casual stuff. An unbelievable young man. Couldn't be prouder of Sam. And congrats to everyone else that's a part of that U.S. Olympics Paralympic team heading to Tokyo for the games. Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Trevor Scales. Keeping that same energy, though, Trev, I don't understand. We all think that our jobs are important, and we all believe that every vocation has a lot to be proud of and all of that. We appreciate everyone trying to do the jobs that they have to do in this life, but apparently Rihanna was denied entry into a Brooklyn bar because she forgot her ID. Trev, I don't have the words. I don't know what Justin Loving God would I feel emboldened enough by to deny Rihanna access to any place that she wanted to go.
Hey, it's just, it's foolish in all types of forms of fashion. Like, how in your right mind can you rationalize that any venue is better without Rihanna in it? And so when you take that logic, right, like, I'm going to call you a fool to begin with, and then you have the audacity to believe that you have some sort of power over what transpires at that door just because you hold the keys to whatever establishment that you're standing in front of. No, dog, look, humble yourself just a little bit to the young man that was probably at that doorway. Humble yourself just a little bit and understand that there are bigger things at play that you need to prioritize, and that is getting Rihanna into the building at all costs, whatever that may be.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. Like, there are very few people that the entire world is on their side, right? Like, you could argue it's like Betty White and Rihanna, and there are very few other answers in that entire process here. So do you really want to be the one on the other side of the headline? Like, that's what you got to think through in these moments before you make a decision that you can't take back. But to finish this one off, speaking of making decisions that you can't take back right now, George R.R. Martin, the author of the Game of Thrones book series, expressed regret that he did not stay ahead of the television series. He had a 5-0 book lead on them and says he feels badly about allowing that timeline to get in front of his, making it awkward. Trev, to which I respond, so do the rest of us, George! So do the rest of us!
Yeah, no, I ain't even fool with Game of Thrones like that, but I knew from all indications of my timeline that it ended poorly. And for that reason, I gotta ask George, player, tighten up. Next time, just be better. Go ahead and get that out there so we can actually finish the series in the right way.
George, who was as critical as anyone of the end of that series, need only look so far as the mirror to find out who could have possibly helped solve the problems that ended up coming up at the end of that series. Trev, we appreciate you hanging out with us today, man. Always a pleasure. Always appreciate you coming here to spread Hawks propaganda in addition to everything else that we get out of today. Everyone, stick around here again. The NBA is coming up on ESPN Radio later on, but Spain and Fitz have you going down next right here. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to Chinay and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.